Welcome to the Bean Ninjas podcast, where you get an all-access pass to see what happens behind the closed doors of a fast-growing global bookkeeping and financial reporting business.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Bean Ninjas podcast. On this week's episode, I'm chatting with Matt after a bit of a break. I've been away on holidays. We've had lockdowns in Brisbane and on the Gold Coast, and now we're back into our routines and catching up on where things are at with Crossbeam. In our last episode, we talked about making the move from beta users to paying customers. And today we're focusing on what it's like now that we're in the growth phase of Crossbeam, adding users, some of the strategies we're thinking about and implementing there, and what Matt's focusing on. We also have a bit of a chat about what it's like as a founder to actually take holidays and what you can do to disconnect from work while you're away. Enjoy. Hey, Matt, it's great to be back on the mics with you again. It's been a little while. How are things with you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Meryl. Yeah, it's good to be back and catch up. It's been a little while since we last recorded, and I had a chance to sort of come on and chat to you about what I've been working on. But we're sort of now post Crossbeam launch. So I've got a couple of thoughts about what sort of worked well there and what hasn't. And we're now, you know, we're live, we've got customers, maybe not as many as I'd like. So that's all positive stuff, I think.
It is. In the last episode, we were talking about, well, how do we switch from having beta users, so people that aren't paying for the product, how do we actually switch over to having paying customers, and what do we need in place to do that? And I mean, it feels great. I know you've run a much bigger SaaS app before, but for me, having one paying customer felt like an achievement because it meant that, well, we've built something that people are willing to pay for. So I was pretty excited about our $49 a month of recurring revenue.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, that came in from that first customer.
It's I don't know. There's still that buzz you get because, you know, we've got a little notification set up. So in Slack, we get a message when a customer installs, and that, you know, that never gets old, seeing that little notification pop up and tell you that someone else is, you know, not only wants to use the software, but they're going to pay for it as well. I think I still get a real buzz out of every single one of those that comes through.
And as you said, we're not growing as quickly as we had hoped, but I know we're not necessarily sharing exact numbers on here, but we're getting closer to that milestone of $1,000 a month of monthly recurring revenue. And it's funny when I say that because the numbers are so different to running a productized service or a service business where you might have one client that pays you $2,000 a month or more. But it's quite a different business model. So I'll throw it back over to you. I know that you've been reflecting on things like the launch and this phase that we're in now, which is about growing our customer base. So do you have any insights or what are some of the things you've been thinking about?
So, you know, I've been thinking about how do we get a faster rate of installs? And, you know, our model with Crossbeam has been that we're sort of doing what I'd call, you know, integration or partnership marketing. So that's our acquisition channels that we work with these platforms, Nido, Maripost, as they're now called. So Maripost is the e-commerce platform that we're built on. All our customers use Maripost for their e-commerce business. And then we integrate with Xero to push across their sales data so that they can reconcile it as part of their bookkeeping. So we've got two sort of very big partners there that we could leverage. Xero less so because they're a much broader market. But with Maripost, we've worked closely with them to build something that can replace OneSaaS, which is, you know, leaving the Xero market. So initially, we thought this was the perfect sort of window into this market. You know, there's an established player that's leaving, and there's going to be customers that are already using the software, and they're going to be forced to go back to market and look for an alternative. And this was our opening. This is our thesis that we could build something to come in, because otherwise, how do you get these people to switch if they've got a product that's already working for them? It's really difficult. And my thing is, if you want someone to switch products, you need to build something that's significantly better. And it can be, you know, in some markets, it can be significantly cheaper if it does the same thing. That might be a good solution. In this market, that wouldn't work because, you know, you're talking double digit monthly subscriptions. So, you know, we might be able to come in and build something for $20 a month, but we're not going to be able to build a very good business on it or build a very good product either. So it's not going to serve us or the customers very well. So we need to build a product that's actually better, delivers a better experience, and delivers a better solution for what these customers need. And so that looked sensible. You know, we had to build something better than that what they already had, which would get them to move across. And they were going to be basically forced to consider our solution because their current one was leaving. And we've had a few people come across, but not as many as we thought. And I've been thinking about why that is. And one of the sort of insights that I can now see and didn't have before is that we've built a better workflow for the problem that they're solving, which is getting sales data from Maripost e-commerce into Xero. But we're doing a different workflow. So we're batching up daily payment data and sending it across, which is a lot more efficient once you're in Xero. But that's not the workflow that these customers have been doing with their current system. So from our perspective, we can see that what we've built is a better, you know, workflow from, you know, if we talk about from first principles, this is a better way of solving that problem. But the problem they see is they want something that replaces their current workflow. And we haven't built exactly that. And so I think there is a disconnect there from, you know, different perspectives.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And we're handling some of the accounting technical support on the Bean Ninja side. And so we're getting some of those questions coming to us of, well, we want the product to do what OneSaaS used to do, and it's not. And so how can we solve things with our existing workflow? And it, as we're discovering, it's quite hard to convince someone to change their existing workflow, even if we think there's a better way to do it. So it's been interesting experiencing that from the customer support side of the product.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to convince people too, because it's not a, you know, if they switch to our workflow, they're not necessarily going to increase sales or, you know, reduce their cost of marketing or anything like that. It's going to just, it'll give them a better result, I think, at the end of the financial year when they're doing their books, everything's neat and tidy. And I think it reduces the workload during the year. But I think it can be hard for them to see, and they just see it as something new they have to understand and have to learn.
Exactly. I think it's harder to measure, because the benefits and the reason we do this workflow when we're working with clients and handling this workflow for them is that it reduces errors, because there's less transaction volume, so less risk of error. And then it just takes way less time. But unless you're seeing a quantifiable dollar drop in, or unless they're seeing that with their bookkeeping fees, or they're paying the admin person or the account, their internal accountant, less, then it's probably hard to actually see a benefit to the bottom line with the workflow we're suggesting. So that's something I'm thinking about, is how can we explain that better?
How do you see this sort of similar problem when you onboard new clients at Bean Ninjas? Like, are you often have to change the way they're doing their bookkeeping workflow?
It depends how much of the process that we're handling. And so ideally, we take over a whole workflow. For example, if we were to run bill payments for someone, then ideally we are involved in the end-to-end workflow. From the point that they get sent a bill from their customer, we want to have access to that bill payment email address, or we want to have a central location where everything's saved. And then we want to run the end-to-end process to the point that we organize everything in Xero, load it up, ready for approval. But to be involved in bits of it, then that involves a lot of negotiation around how the workflow works. And so I learned some hard lessons in the early days of Bean Ninjas, where we were responsible for bits of the process, but were somehow responsible for the accuracy of the entire process. So we basically were responsible for things that we couldn't control. And when I had a few bad experiences where things went wrong and it didn't feel like it was that we could have controlled it, but we hadn't set the right expectations.
Yes, yeah. So you sort of had unlimited downside there, didn't you? Like, there's so much that could go wrong that you would then be on the hook for.
Exactly. And so now when we work with a new client, we're really clear about what are the workflows, and there's common e-commerce and accounting workflows like paying bills or chasing debtors, and we're really clear about which bits we're responsible for and which bits the client is responsible for.
And I guess it's a different sales process as well. Like, if a client comes to Bean Ninjas, there's going to be a conversation. It's a much more bigger commitment for that client to switch to Bean Ninjas than to install a SaaS app to, you know, automate their bookkeeping. So there's, I guess there's well, there's more friction. Once they get past that friction, they're committed and invested and ready to sort of get on that train.
That's right. And I think that can be the downside of services, is because if someone's paying that kind of money and they're often, you're not going to switch bookkeepers or accountants too often, so they're probably going to be around for a few years, it's very easy to get sucked into saying, oh, yeah, well, we'll just adapt our process in this. We'll do this one-off change.
Right.
We'll do this one-off update. And then all of a sudden you've got 15 different clients with 15 different ways of doing things, and it's hard to scale your business. And I've noticed that with building an app, we just have to say no. It's not possible. We can't just tweak it a little bit, because that could involve hours of development time. And so that's been actually something that I've learned from building an, well, for me, more on the selling side of software, is trying to take that back to a services business and be more disciplined around what we are saying yes to and what we're saying no to.
It's actually, I think, yeah, absolutely. That's been a hard one lesson that I sort of have taken on board, that I want to say yes. You know, a customer says, if only it did this, then, you know, we could use it for our business, or you just need to change the way this bit of works. And it's almost easier just to say yes and go away and build that feature, particularly if, you know, I'm a software guy, I like building software. It's an excuse to go build more software, but you then got to support it. And, you know, it can limit what other features you can introduce later. It's, you know, there's more, the risk of more bugs. It's the cost of ownership of adding those features that can really get you into trouble.
And I might expand on what you've been talking about with, now we're thinking about, well, how can we increase the growth rate? How can we get more people installing the app and using it and sticking around?
Yeah.
And something that I've been thinking about and working on is, right, we had a go at converting some of the OneSaaS customers. Their product's no longer available, so they've had to find another option. That's kind of wrapping up now. And so now moving my attention to, when someone moves to Neato, which is now Maripost, if they are onboarded, then that's the right time for them also to be thinking about how they're going to integrate that with Xero, and that's the right time for them to install our app. So how do I make sure that in that onboarding process, they're aware of what Crossbeam does and that they know where it fits in? And one of the things we're doing there is a workshop for the customer success and onboarding team at Maripost next week to give them a demo of the app, I better understand their workflow of how are they actually working with their customers and onboarding them, to make sure that we're explaining and giving them the right resources to put Crossbeam front and center.
Yeah, I think that's a golden opportunity there, because they're coming on without necessarily a workflow in place. So we're just going to, you know, clear all that sort of objections and momentum that they've already got with their current workflow. And if they're just setting up from scratch, even if they've got an existing business and they're just replatforming to Maripost, it's, you know, they're already out there making these decisions. So I think we've got a much better chance of being involved.
And it feels quite different, this approach. As you said, our marketing is based on our partners. So our strategy is to work to collaborate with partners like Maripost and Xero. And then it's quite different to BNinjas, which in the early days it was about content marketing and being active in communities and speaking on podcasts. So it's interesting to feel this is quite a different type of marketing, and interesting to learn about it.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, the one thing I'm really encouraged about is that there's a lot of even the customers that have installed or I've had a call with and have said, no, it's not going to work for us, they were really keen to find something that did work. So there's definitely demand, even if we're not the right fit for a lot of these businesses. So I think even if we're not, you know, right on track here, I think we're definitely sort of heading in the right direction.
Yeah. And so what's your focus going to be over the next little while? There are features that we could build, but we don't know whether it's worth investing in those features. There's a little bit of customer support. There's always things that we could be doing. So how are you thinking about where to spend your time?
So I'm trying to be really disciplined and not, you know, start adding, you know, not trying to like build features to sort of find our way to growth or anything like that, and just be really disciplined by what we add. So there's some things that we need to do, and the big one on my plate at the moment is Xero certification. So at the moment, where you're connected to Xero and you can install Crossbeam and connect it to your Xero account, but we're going through the process with Xero of being certified. And that doesn't really mean change much to the product, but there's a bunch of requirements where they have to, you know, we have to support certain functionalities in Xero that we don't necessarily see them as important for our customers, but they're a requirement from Xero. So I've got to go through and do those. And the big benefit will then be that we they increase the limit of number of Xero accounts we can connect to. So if we didn't do this, at some point we'd actually not be able to onboard any more customers. So that's my most urgent sort of task at the moment. And then beyond that, it's going to be looking at, I think, figuring out if there is a couple of like key features that we could add. One thing that's come up in the past is a debtors ledger. So we may need to look at adding that, but then sort of figuring out how much of an investment is this, and seeing if it's going to pay off for the number of customers that would actually use it. That's sort of everything from me. Can we talk more about what you've been up to, Meryl? Because I know you've had a break recently. You've been away with the family, taking some time off.
Yeah, so I took a holiday. We did a road trip up to Airlie Beach in Queensland. And I'm from Victoria, so I've seen lots of country Victoria, but I haven't actually seen a lot of the little towns in Queensland. So we had a great time driving up, exploring towns, beachside towns along the way, and then Airlie Beach is an access point to the Whitsunday Islands and Great Barrier Reef. So we had a really fun time. In hindsight, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a big road trip with a two-year-old. So we're going to be more mindful of how we plan out those trips in the future. But it was great to get away, to get into the sunshine and be by the beach.
And were you able to sort of disconnect, or did you have to check in with work every day? Or, you know, how does that work for you? Are you removed enough now that you can actually have time off?
So usually I can. Usually if there's a holiday, then I can plan that. And there's nothing urgent during the week. I won't have to check email, won't have to check Slack, and I might do some writing, or I still find myself thinking about work, but I love thinking about business. So it's kind of like I'm always thinking about business stuff because I find it fun. But I was working on a deal, which I can talk about in another podcast episode. And so that's time sensitive. Those kind of things. And so I needed to be replying to emails, going backwards and forwards with our lawyer. So I did have to check in, but outside of working on that deal, I was trying not to work. But it is really hard, because when you go into your email to reply to one, then you see all of the other ones.
Yes.
And you could just spend 5 minutes replying to a bunch of them so that you're not holding up other people and then they can continue.
Yeah.
So I did actually do that. Even though I tried only to work on the deal, I did find myself once I opened my email, replying to other people and getting a little bit into it.
And do you have a sort of an escalation process or something? So I don't know what could happen, but is there something there that's like, okay, this is critical enough that we need to escalate it to Meryl and call a phone or something like that? Or is it just a matter of you keeping an eye on everyone now and then?
So team members have my phone number, so they know that if I'm not checking email, that they can send me an SMS and then I'll be available that way. But because we've got the country leaders in place, so we have Tracy that runs Bin Ninjas Australia, we've got Wayne that runs Bin Ninjas US and Tom that runs UK, so they can handle any client issue. They are able to make, they've got full autonomy to make decisions, refunds, anything like that. They can handle all of that. And so there's nothing normally that urgent outside of client things that would need to be escalated to me, but there is that option. It hasn't happened that I've had to be contacted urgently on holidays, but it's good to have that in place for people to know, this is what they would do if something did arise, or if there was a legal dispute or something, you know, catastrophic for the business.
Papers are being served at the office or something, sitting yes. there with a Mai Tai oblivion.
Yeah. I mean, how have you handled that in the past, previously when you were running back in stock? Were you able to take holidays?
It was difficult sometimes because, you know, it was for a long time it was just me and I was doing customer support email, and that typically I had to check in every day. So I remember, you know, a few years ago I got married and we were on a honeymoon, and every morning after breakfast I would take my laptop to the hotel sort of lobby where there was Wi-Fi, and I just sit down for half an hour and go through my customer support email. But then I'd turn it off and put it away, so I could sort of just time box it and go, okay, well, I've got to do a half an hour every morning, but then it's done. And that was actually, I had to get to that point. So, you know, early on, I had things like my phone would send me a notification every time I got a customer support email. And that is a recipe for, you know, really stress and high blood pressure. So I learned to turn that off, because most things don't need to be attended to immediately. You know, as long as you set expectations. I was quite clear that I'll respond to support emails by next business day. You know, often as long as you're exceeding that, no one's really going to complain. Every now and then someone does, but I think often there's going to be a few people that are unhappy no matter what you do. So you sort of just need to set expectations and manage that. The other big thing that was sort of with SaaS products, like a web app, is maintaining servers and things like that. So you have, if there's an issue with a server going down in the middle of the night, someone needs to fix it. And so in the last few years, there have been times where my phone would ring in the middle of the night and there's an automated message telling me that some server's failed or some other error condition has got to a point. And it's a similar thing. It's like there's an escalation strategy. If there's an error for 5 minutes and it goes away, you're fine. But, you know, at a certain point, it crosses a threshold and it triggers a phone call and it wakes me up in the middle of the night. That was something that I didn't find stressful a lot of the time. But after I sold the business, I really enjoyed not having that. So I think maybe it was a bit stressful, but I'd built up a tolerance to it and didn't really notice that level, that bit of stress that was on me.
I had always wondered about that from the software side, about the site going down, customers can't use the software to do what they need to do and having to fix that. And picturing it happening, you know, right where you're on holidays or you're somewhere in Bali and there's no Wi-Fi or phone reception.
I think the worst time for it to happen is before you get on an international flight or something. Because, I mean, back then there wasn't any Wi-Fi on international flights. And so in one sense, it was really peaceful. even if there was problems, there was nothing you could do about it. So you just sit back. But and I think it's definitely something that it got a lot better. So, you know, it's probably in the last year I had the business. By then I had two developers working for me and they were able to actually not only deal with some of these things that came up, but fix the root cause problems. And once they go away, then, you know, you start to have a lot more sort of space to sort of fix smaller issues and then things become a lot calmer.
Well, speaking of space, something that I've been experimenting with this quarter has been working a 4-day week. So I had already cut back my hours because I try and finish by 3 every afternoon so I can go and spend the afternoon with my daughter. But this time around, I thought I actually want to try having a whole day off. And I didn't want to pick a Monday or a Friday because Mondays is my no meeting day and I come in so motivated, full of ideas and really that's probably my most productive day in the week. And then Friday, I'm starting to get tired anyway and often finish closer to lunchtime. And so that kind of seemed like a bit of a waste of a day off. So I've been experimenting with Tuesdays and it actually felt kind of weird the first few weeks. I actually turned up at work on one of those first Tuesdays because I wasn't in the habit of not working.
Well, I think you scheduled a Zoom meeting with me and then you had to message, you go, oh, sorry, I'm meant to be taking that day off. We rescheduled it, which I thought was really funny that, you know, most people, the idea of having a day off, they'd be like canceling things all over the place, but you're actually just still booking meetings.
Well, because it's not in my head. And then because I had that holiday, I came back and then I've been out of the habit. But you're right, I did it because I was scheduling things and then I was, oh, hang on, I've got tomorrow off. I've got to cancel everything. And I actually like working. So it's been a good experiment for me in trying to switch off and trying to carve out some time that, because having a young family, often it feels like it's work and it's family. They're my two priorities and my health, which I try and fit in exercise, but there wasn't a lot of room for anything else for me. And so it's been fun having Tuesdays where I've had a bit of time to think, oh, I could actually go for a longer mountain bike ride, or I could just go and have a coffee at a cafe by myself and think for a few hours without anyone needing anything from me. So I'm enjoying it now, but I'm more than 6 weeks in and definitely I felt kind of strange and a bit guilty, actually, the first couple of Tuesdays where I was trying to get into the groove.
Yeah, I mean, the guilt thing is interesting, isn't it? Because there's a sort of this assumption, I think, just I guess it's just in the society that we live in that, you know, work should be 5 days a week if you can, and then you can have 2 days weekend. But there's if you don't have to, why should you, right?
Exactly. And I think I felt a bit guilty too because I could have been spending more time with my daughter. I could have been doing more housework. But that's not really how that wasn't my goal in setting up my business, was to have more time to do house chores.
Right.
It was to have more freedom to have adventures and do fun things or challenge myself. And it was funny. I didn't really have much headspace the first couple of weeks to fill that time with anything. But now I've had a bit more time. I've joined an indoor soccer team. So it's not on Tuesdays, but I've actually had a bit of headspace to think about, oh, what would I like to do? And I love playing sport and doing adventure sports. So signed up for indoor soccer and also doing a team event with the Coolangatta Gold, which is a surf life-saving race. So I think just I had to give myself a bit more space first,
yeah,
to then fill it with fun things. But we do have a baby, a second baby on the way. My partner's pregnant, due in January. So I know that I've got this little window, and then we'll be back into the waking up every few hours for feeding and broken sleep. So I might have to put some of these things on hold again.
It's the calm before the storm at the moment.
Yes.
And so are you going to I guess the other thing is, how's the rest of the week going at work then? You know, if you've taken Tuesday out, are you feeling more pressure, or are you working really long hours the rest of the week?
I'm still working on that because I think I'm still trying to fit a five-day work week into 4 days.
Right.
And so I felt quite busy actually the last little while. But the reason another reason to do it is it's forcing me to make some more decisions of, right, I'm doing a 4 day work week now. So some of these things have to be cut, or they need to be pushed into next quarter. And I'm still adjusting to that. I'm still trying to do a 5 day work week in four at the moment. But it's taken me some time, but I have already pushed some things into next quarter now and got a bit clearer about, do I need to say no to more?
But it's hard to sort of then actually take that day off and not try and still make up for it the rest of the week.
Yeah, definitely. And how do you juggle your schedule around family and health and also the pressures of a startup?
Yeah, so I think it goes up and down. So I have Monday to Wednesday, I finish it by 2:30 so I can go to the school pickup and pick my son up, and we hang out in the afternoon. And I just, I've just wanted to do that. I just want that time because he's still young. I figure enjoy it now. When he gets older, he won't want to hang out with me. So make the most of it while I can. And then I have Thursday and Friday. So sort of Thursday is often my day where I really can dive deep into something and get a lot of stuff done. And so I then try to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because they're shorter days, I tend to just leave that for sort of shorter broken up tasks. And that's just how I sort of keep my flow going. And then I also find that there'll be, you know, when we were leading up through June, we had this sort of end of June launch date for Crossbeam, and I found that I was working a lot. So I was often after dinner and, you know, the kids in bed, I was getting back to the office and working a few hours every night, which I don't particularly like to do. Like, I quite like thinking and doing things at night, but I think just trying to cram more hours in the week, it's diminishing returns. Often things that take you 3 or 4 hours when you're tired, if you do it fresh in the morning, you can get it done really quickly. So it's not necessarily a very effective way to work, but we were sort of experiencing a bit of crunch trying to meet that deadline. And so now things have settled down. I'm trying to step back and be really thoughtful about what I'm working on. So, you know, not rushing to add features and trying to just probably just sort of ride the wave of how busy things are at the moment.
And I imagine Thursdays, if someone suggests a meeting right in the middle of Thursday, you must just hate that, because that's your time. That's the maker. Do you know, have you heard of the maker and manager schedule?
Yes.
So makers want to have blocks, big blocks of uninterrupted time without meetings. Whereas managers, they might be managing 7 people, and so their job's to keep everyone ready, and so their day is more in half an hour blocks. And so when you have the the managers and the makers kind of try to schedule around each other, sometimes the managers can not appreciate that you need a big block of uninterrupted time, or even the thought of having a meeting in the afternoon can derail the day because you think, well, I don't have time to finish that task. I'm not even going to start it. I mean, what's that like for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I feel like I don't have much time left, it's really hard to get into something that's quite deep. And there's a couple of strategies I try to, you know, work with there. And often I may have turned it off at the moment, but my Calendly link where I let, you know, customers have a link where they can book a Zoom call with me, I'll actually just block out Thursday so that they can't book a meeting on Thursday because that's when I'm actually trying to get stuff done. And I can turn that off, you know, when we're launching and maybe I want to talk to customers more rather than diving into deep work. I'll open that up. But other times when I really want to focus, I'll just, you know, block out time and say no meetings on Thursday. And the other thing I always try to, you know, when I am working on something, leave it at a position where it's easy to dive back in. And sometimes that can mean finishing a bit sooner or not moving on to the next step because I want a clean break so that I know when I sit down, I know exactly what to start with rather than having to try and figure out what I was in the middle of or halfway through when I left off.
That reminds me of something that I learned in the Building a Second Brain course, which we will talk about on a future episode.
I want to hear more about that.
So there's the starting off. So he talks about mise en place, which is like a chef term for preparing everything in an organized way so that you're ready to start work. And so that might be in the chef example, it might be having everything in like your knives, the board, the ingredients all prepped, ready to go. So if you've got five dishes to get out in the next short amount of time, you can do it really efficiently. But then also the opposite of that is that close down routine of finishing in a nice place, making whatever notes you need, saving it in the relevant place. So when you sit down to work, you don't have to think, oh, where was I up to with that? And then spend 20 minutes trying to figure out where you're up to. So it sounds like you've got a nice routine there around that closing a task down, ready to pick it up effectively next time.
Yeah, definitely. I think, that sort of describes it really well is, being able to sit down and just know where everything is and know, where to pick up from.
Well, I think we've covered a pretty broad range of topics. We talked about Crossbeam and then we've gone into some of the more personal work-life balance productivity topics, which are some of my favorites too. So thanks so much for coming back on the Bean News podcast again, Matt, and looking forward to our next episode.
Yep, likewise. Thanks, Meryl. Looking forward to it. Take care.